Hello and welcome to Make Audio. I'm Phil Terone, associate editor of Make Magazine, and for the next half an hour or so, we'll be talking about news, science, technology, hacking, do-it-yourself projects, and all sorts of good things like that. On this show, I'm going to be talking about Audible's new RSS feeds, some things about those and what you can do with them, some audiobook DRM in libraries, interesting thing that's going on with a library in Virginia, and how some ebooks can't be used. Nikon RAW images, another kind of DRM-ish issue that's come up this week. I'm going to talk about two projects, the Flickr photo frame in my kitchen, a Skype payphone, and some telco politics, which is kind of interesting. And I'll tell you how to find out who in your neighborhood gave who to what in the last election. And then I'll play some live calls and answer some questions. So let's get started. First up, Audible has a new RSS feed, and if you go to audible.com/RSS, you can see some of the things that they have available. And for the folks at home who aren't into RSS yet or not quite sure what it is, basically it allows you to subscribe to a website without having to go back and check it, and the website sends out headlines and a little description about what's on the site. And with different versions of RSS, you can actually deliver things like audio or video or just about any file, and those are called enclosures. So the interesting thing that I think is that Audible's kind of moved to this RSS model where you can subscribe to things like bestsellers in fiction or bestsellers in mystery, top 50 sellers on Audible, and all sorts of other things. I had subscribed to the Audible, the best sellers in technology, and, you know, it has a pretty good list of things that I might buy. But the thing I was a little disappointed with, which I'm really surprised, I guess maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but, you know, if you're going to deliver the RSS out there, and there's so many people who like podcasting now, and podcasting is this show and all sorts of new shows out there where you're delivering MP3s and files out there, why not deliver a little snippet of the audiobook that you're planning on selling, like a little excerpt of an audiobook from technology? That would really make me want to buy it. A good example is Scientific American. If they were able to maybe deliver a story once a week or something, I would really like to have that on my iPod or my Dell DJ or my home computer or whatever. And so Audible has all this stuff. They just haven't connected those things. So I'm going to send them an email, and if you guys have Audible accounts, I have an Audible account, and I probably spend maybe $20 a month or so sometimes, because they do have great content, but it's just hard to know what's in there, and it's also not always clear like what it's going to sound like or what type of readers they have to do the specific things. I get a lot of technology magazines via audiobook, but you know, I think that would be something kind of cool for them to do. It would be neat if they would consider it, if they could, you know, pump out some of the Feynman lectures on physics, because there's a ton of volumes on those through the Technology Channel, just like little snippets. Now, there might be a talent issue or something on how these things are distributed, and you can only distribute them in a certain way, but a little excerpt, I think, would be fine, just like you can listen to a preview on a tune on a lot of the music stations. So we'll see how that works out, and hopefully they'll change that. But if you're interested in Audible and audiobooks, and if you're listening to this, you probably are in some way. Do check that out, and the link to it is in the show notes. And speaking of audiobooks, this is kind of interesting, and I think this might be a maker challenge for you guys out there who like to solve problems. And this one is a little bit of a policy problem, and it's a little bit of a technical problem. So here's the background. There is a library, the Fairfax County Public Library in Northern Virginia, which is a suburb of D.C., and they decided that, hey, here's a neat service that we can give our members. You have your library card, and you can enter in your library card number, and I think you get a password, and you can download audiobooks to your computer. Sounds great. There's over 700 of them. I think the contract that they signed was for around $50,000. They went to this company called NetLibrary that distributes these. All sounds great, but the bad news is these are audiobooks in the Windows Media format that are DRM, digital rights managed. So that basically means you can't play these on a Macintosh computer, a Linux computer, or iPods. Now, taxpayer money was used to purchase these audiobooks, so there's something to be said about, well, what's the best way to do this where, you know, everybody can access it? And it's causing a little bit of a problem right now, because, of course, the people with iPods, there's a lot of them. There's like 25 million of them. So it's pretty obvious that the folks who are going to probably use this service have an iPod and have a need to use these, and you can't even if you have an iPod and you have a PC, you can't use this. So the only thing that you can use is your PC that has Windows Media support and a device like a Dell DJ or Creative Zen or any of those that have support for the Windows Media DRM. Now, a lot of people in the area are upset about this, and I think the library would like to, and this is just my impression, I think that the library would just like to figure out a way around this, but they really can't, and I think they're stuck with this. There's some other audiobook publishers out there. Overdrive is one, and Audible, who I just mentioned about the RSS feeds, is the other. But I think that they're always going to be stuck in this dilemma where they're going to have a service that's not exactly available for everyone. And so there's a couple websites, a couple news stories. I have links to the show notes. But Phil Shapiro wrote a song about this that I thought was pretty funny, and I wanted to play it, so here it is.
I went to the library for an audio book. They told me to download, a minute it took. And when it got done, I found out instead this audio book, it could not be read. Your audiobook sounds silent to me, sounds silent to me, sounds silent to me. Your audiobook sounds silent to me, I much prefer MP3. I went to the library for an audiobook. They told me to download, a minute it took. And when it got done, instead, this audio book could not be read. Your audio book sounds silent to me, sounds silent to me, sounds silent to me. Your audio book sounds silent to me, I much prefer MP3.
I think I much prefer MP3 too. So that's the situation as it stands right now. I don't know what they're going to do. I think that they might be stuck in this contract where they can't get out of it. And if you want to check out these audiobooks, then you're pretty much stuck with those solutions. It seems a little unfair to me, but I understand that they probably could only sell this through if there was some way to protect this. But then, you know, here's the problem with that type of DRM. I guess my big question is, so what does the library do about books that people check out? I mean, you know, I could go and photocopy the entire book. Are they, obviously, books can be checked out. At the Seattle Public Library where I'm at, there's entire CD collections. Couldn't someone just walk over to the CDs, check them out, or use them right there and pop them into their computer and make all the copies they want? And of course they can, and that's the point. You know, people that are going to do dishonest things are going to do that no matter what, and people that are going to just enjoy and listen to the music no matter what, they're going to do that. So it seems like there could have been an agreement just to track the usage of these downloads. Like, okay, you downloaded whatever audiobook from NetLibrary, and it's in an MP3 format, and you could, there's all sorts of things. I mean, I'm not sure how I feel about tagging the MP3s, but you could easily tag the MP3 and put the borrower's code in it. And sure, all these things can be removed and all that, but it seems to me like there's a better solution than just completely avoiding the big elephant in the room, which is, okay, you're going to have to address this in some way, and you're going to have to provide these for folks. Because the first things that I saw is, you know, people are heading there trying to figure out ways to break this or crack this. And so I think the analog hole that's always open that I think people might do is they might have someone who has one of these players, and they'll just record it out of the line out. And that's how they'll listen to it, so they can enjoy it later on their computer. I mean, it's, you know, kind of a bummer that it might work out that way, but that's what might happen. So I guess what I would say is, for anyone who's considering a solution that's for a library or for a township or something that's definitely with taxpayer dollars, there's got to be a better solution. I mean, if you're going to pay $50,000 for a solution for people to download audiobooks, I mean, at the end of the day, if it gets to the point where only a certain type of computer with a certain type of operating system, just buy the CDs and then let people do what they're going to do, or buy the, even, you know, even cassette tapes at this point, I think would maybe even be better, and people could check out the cassette tapes or something. At least there would be a way for them to listen to the content. So if you guys have any ideas on how to solve this, check out the show links, or just post up in the comments, or give us a ring, because I really would like to figure out a way to solve this for these folks, because it seems, I love audiobooks, I think they're great, and you know, you can just do so much when you're just have hostage time and you're trapped and you can't do anything like planes and buses and commuting and all sorts of things like that. So being able to distribute those books to all the patrons of the library would be great, and more so if you didn't have to have a PC or a specific type of music player to listen to them. And speaking of DRM, I was following this Nikon story that, man, I don't know what to think of it yet. I'm not into digital photography enough to know how big of a deal this is, but it seems like it is to me. So Nikon has their D2X and D2H digital SLR cameras, and high-end digital photographers like to take the raw files off the camera and do things with it. They don't like the camera to do any type of processing or whatever. They just like to take the images directly from the camera and then use whatever application they want to do all the adjustments. Sounds exactly like, you know, negatives on a camera. And Nikon is doing some sort of encryption where they're making it so you have to use their proprietary software. Now, apparently, they do allow some type of SDK, and they released a statement, and over on O'Reilly Radar, Mark had posted up I think it's a good translation of it, and when you go through their statement, they only allow authorized developers to use their SDK. You have to be bona fide. You have to be a bona fide software company, which you've sent a written application to Nikon. You need to have it's a confidential thing, so I think it's some, you have to be under NDA. And that is how you can now create new applications that can use that type of format, this new raw image format. I think it's called NEF from Nikon. So, you know, this sounds pretty bad to me. It sounds like your negatives are going to be held up by Nikon. And that wouldn't be a big deal if we didn't all live through the following scenario. You have a piece of equipment, you have some files on it that it made, and you have them on your hard drive, and then time goes by, and then the company is no longer around, they don't support the hardware anymore, and to get those files, to open up the data, to use that format, you have to have this piece of software that came with the device, and you don't have the software anymore, the company's gone and out of business, so what do? Well, this actually happened with Canon, from what I understand. Canon has a camera that they don't support anymore, and there's already an issue with being able to access the files. And so it seems to me that this is a potentially bad thing. I'm following all of the stories that are going on around the digital photography sites. There's a few that are out with, I think it's DP Preview, DP Review has some interesting news on it. But what happened immediately is a group formed called Open Raw. And it's a call to actively document the raw file formats of all these cameras. And they also note that the Canon camera, the D30, which came out in May 2000, which is about 5 years ago, if you shot it in raw format, that's obsolete as well. So I think that in the history of devices, it's pretty common for this to happen. So if you're going to take photos and you're going to put them in a raw format, you're going to put them on your hard drive, you want to assume that, you know, years and years from now, that these types of formats will be usable. They also kind of have a good scenario that they talk about in this openraw.org site where, you know, 60 years from now, what are people going to do with all of the types of photography? I mean, you know, people are moving from film to digital. And they just talk about, you know, finding cameras that were maybe just, you know, there's an accident or something and, you know, it's found 50 years later. Or other scenarios that I think that make a lot of sense. Just in general, once you make something from a camera and the file's off, it seems like that should be it. The camera, there shouldn't be any other ownership from the manufacturer onto the file format once it's made. So once it's off the camera, it should be fine. So for you digital photography nuts out there, let me know if this is, you know, something, is this a big deal? It seems like it is. A lot of people seem to be upset. But there's already two cracks, I guess. There's something called Bibble. There's a photo manipulation software and workflow organization tool. And also, Dave Coffin has a raw digital photo decoder for Linux, and he's already posted that, and he has a note about how this got started and some other things. So you can check out his site. Those are in the show notes if you're interested in decoding these things. But it seems like a good idea to document all these raw image formats and kind of having this as a ongoing project that you'll always be able to look at and actively participate in some way and add the raw image file formats up there so you can always do things with your photos. And on a somewhat related photo note, on the Make photo pool from Flickr, you can see a couple photos of the Kitchen Flickr photo frame project. That's hard to say five times, and I'm not going to attempt it. But what I did is I've been finding devices on eBay and searching around for equipment that is cheap enough to use for other purposes without going over the cost to actually build some of the components. And I really like photo frames. I don't know why I do, but I really like the idea of a wireless photo frame that always streams in the photos from your friends and family. And it was hard to do a long time ago, but Flickr automatically does it. And for the folks who don't use Flickr, it's FLICKR.com. And also on the Makezine site, you can see the photos that we take and post up on the Make photo pool. You can join a group and post up all your photos. But anyways, the really neat thing that I like is, you know, for $300 or so, you can pick up an old tablet PC. There's tablet PCs that have been out there long enough that are actually broken and kind of discarded, and eBay is a great graveyard for these. And one of the best ones I've been scoping out that you can use is a Acer TravelMate C100 or just called C110s, I think. And the neat thing about these is it looks like a laptop, a tiny laptop, and the top swivels around, and you can use that as an under-the-counter photo frame that folds down from under the counter, and it has a wireless card, and you can do all sorts of neat things with it. And I have some photos of the start of the project, and some of the other things looking forward to doing with it is have a audio receiver so I can listen to audio shows, podcasts on it while I'm doing the dishes. And that's pretty much the main reason why I was starting this, is I don't like doing the dishes, but when I do them, if I could look at things like catching up on photos from friends and family, that would be kind of interesting. And being able to see those and always have it running is kind of a nice thing for in the kitchen. To control it, I'm using a free tool called VNC that's been around forever. So once I mounted it and it's upside down on the cabinet, it didn't make a lot of sense to try to go underneath and use. But you can use the pen if you wanted to. But for the most part, I just log in to VNC from my Mac, and that allows full control of the system, where you can have it go to a specific website or type in things, or basically just control the whole thing. So I've been setting it on my PC or my Mac or my other systems here, and in the kitchen it just plays. So we'll see how it goes. There's some other photo frame projects that I'm working on, but that's the one I'm excited about now. The other project that's up on the Make Photo blog is the Skype payphone project. And this is another fun one. I really like payphones. I'm not sure why. I've been fascinated with them since I was a kid. I think the reason why I was always fascinated with them is it kind of unlocked computer hacking and fun and interesting things for me. Is, you know, when everybody was making these blue boxes where you could run around and simulate the sound of a quarter or a dime or a nickel and make free phone calls. And that was when it was like, wow, you know, you could put all that knowledge together, and there's all sorts of interesting circuitry. There's things that you can get from Radio Shack, sound, and all these things when you put them together are really interesting. So I've always liked payphones. So I managed to score a payphone. I'm looking at it right now. It's a real payphone. It's you press buttons and you can put quarters in it and all those things, and I really like it. You can find these on eBay or telco supply houses, and they range from $20 to all the way up to $200 to $300-$400. So hunt around via your favorite search engine, and you might find some good places to find these. But basically, you can modify these to use as a regular phone line, and once you do that, that unlocks all sorts of things. So the first project that I have is, well, using this as a microphone and a headset for making phone calls, and just using it on my Mac or my PC as the microphone and headset input. or output, I should say, for one of those. And that's neat, so that's coming along. And then the next thing that would be interesting is, well, what if I had it set up so that's how the keypad entered a username and password? Or when you put in a quarter, that went to your Skype In account? Or all sorts of other things. So I really like the idea of using this payphone as a real phone, but taking it to, you know, 2005 and using it with Skype or Vonage or one of the voice over IP projects. So that's where it started right now. I'm posting stuff on the makezine.com site, and you can look at the photos and see some of the bits of the project in progress, and see what you think. There's some interesting things with it, and like I said, when you look at it's just so neat to look at a payphone in your house. You know, when it rings, it's just kind of funny. So anyways, that's the payphone project, and there'll be links to that in the show notes as well. And last up, before I get to the call-ins, there was a neat story on Slashdot about the U.S. Inter-American Telephone Commission. It's a conference that's held like 3 times a year or so. And the current administration, Bush administration, said, hey, if you supported Kerry in the last election, you're not invited to this because, you know, and this is the quote, call us nutty, it seemed like those who wanted to kick this administration out of town last November would have difficulty doing that. So, yeah, that's interesting. If you look at how they got the information, I don't care either way about, you know, the politics of this. It looks like Qualcomm and Nokia were some of the companies that couldn't, their employees couldn't go because they supported a political candidate other than the ones that are currently in office. But if you want to know how they found out, well, I don't know if they found out the same way I did, but if you go to opensecrets.org, you can go to, there's a tab up the top and it says Who Gives. And when you look at industries, you can see accountants, computers, oil, gas, pharmaceuticals, tobacco, TV, movies, and more industries. You can look at the top all-time donors, you can look at a donor lookup, and that's how you can actually enter in all of the information that you may or may not know about anybody. You can just go by zip code and see how your town voted or how they donated, I should say. I guess it's pretty safe to say if they donated one way, they voted one way. But what's interesting is, you know, you can find CEOs of companies, you can find all sorts of people who donated. And in this article, someone had donated just $250 to another candidate, and they weren't invited. So it's kind of interesting how this information is out there. And so I'm going to go there right now. I'm going to go to All States, and I'm going to go to Employer and type in, let's see, Qualcomm. And I'm going to check off select one or more of the following recent cycles, 2004. So that's the date of the election. And then I'm going to click search. And wow, look at all this. So we've got Qualcomm Inc. product manager, all sorts of Qualcomm employees that are listed from all sorts of states, San Diego, California. There's all sorts of different places in areas of the country here. And I'm just scrolling up and down, and I see all sorts of things. The first one that came up is a $500 donation for John Kerry. The Democratic National Convention, John Kerry, DNC, a couple of Orrin Hatches. You've got a couple for George Bush. Now, that's a shame that some of the Qualcomm, maybe they should invite that Qualcomm guy since he supported folks. And then, you know, you've got a pretty wide selection. But, you know, just scanning down this list right now, it looks like there's a lot of Democrats on this, just a lot of DNC services. So I don't know, maybe Qualcomm is, you know, the type of company, if you don't want Democrats running, you gotta keep those guys out. So let's type in Nokia and see what happens. Yeah, geez, lots of John Kerry's, a couple for MoveOn.org, and then for Howard Dean. So check this out, it is opensecrets.org. Look at the top tab and then look at the Who Gives section. And enter in your favorite CEOs and people that you like to know a little bit of information about, and you'll get some weird and wacky stuff. And hey, and if you're in, you know, if you're gonna have a party at your house or your own conference, maybe look up your guest list and see how they donated. And if you don't like that, you know, don't invite them. And now it's time to take some calls. Well, these actually aren't calls. The way you can call or leave a message or make a comment to the show or to Make Magazine or whatever is to call our number 206-888-MAKE, and that's actually a little free voicemail service from k7.net, and I get a little WAV file, and then I play it here. So let's play the first one.
Hi there. My name is Bree Pettis, and I'm just calling to find out I have a question about whether or not I've got some photographs that I have a 35mm neg for. I want to find out if it's cheaper to go down and print C print or if it's cheaper to print digital print. Because I want them to be like, I don't know, 20 by 24. Anyway, you can put them on the cast or put the answer on the cast, or maybe you could, or you could get back to me at my blog at retetis.com. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, you know, the last time I checked, most of the photo places around here will do like up to 12 inch or so of regular photo, digital photo prints, and that's about $20. And then anything over that, you know, like you were saying, 20 inch by 24, they would probably suggest, and this is just probably for a one-off or so, I suspect you're not going to make 500 of these, is, you know, $50-$60. So I'd say, you know, depending on your size, I think the cheapest way might be to go online and go and look up all the different poster sizes that you can do. I use iPhoto, and on iPhoto, you can get a 20 by 30 for $22.99. So I have a suspicion that the cheapest way is going to be to get it done digitally, but probably the best looking one will be a darkroom process because you have the 35mm negatives. And I think that might turn out a better result. But if anyone has any other suggestions, do call us at 888-MAKE, area code 206. And remember, that's a long-distance call, so it's certainly not free. Next up, let's take another one.
Jason Frazier, a subscriber. Thinking about a project that I've had kind of on the back burner for a while. It would be pretty interesting. Kind of like an infrared controller, controlled by the computer. So let's say you have a project box hooked up to the serial port that's able to learn commands through different remotes in your house, and then you can also send those commands so you can control things with your computer from, let's say, from your TV or stereo, or you could even control other projects that have infrared circuitry hooked up to them. Easy piece of software to write to interpret the commands and memorize them so you could have a nice little interface on there. I have a little interesting idea, but might want to see where you can take it. Thanks.
All right, well, there are a lot of IR resources, oddly enough. It's so funny that you mentioned that. I have a section on our delicious/magazine/IR section. The link is in the show notes. And there's a few projects. The first one is a PC IR remote control. And this is a full-on board and circuit diagram and software that someone had made. And they have signal capturing. They have how to do things with the information once you get it, and then also how to play it back. The other thing you can do is look at the how to build an IR receiver page. And this is, you know, again, one of those projects where you can build a simple or cool one. And the parts are listed, and the information that you need to get it going is out there. There's a couple different applications that you're going to need once you build your system. I think this is going to be true across all of them. On Linux, there's Lurk, L-I-R-C. And on Windows, there's WinLurk, Girder, IR Assistant, or UIRC. And that's what you'll need to use to control the circuit to make it do what you want it to do. And then the last one that I have on my list is the UIR Universal Infrared Receiver, and this is again a it's another example of how you can build one, and then the software that they're using is Girder. So I think that's what a lot of people are doing once they build the IR receivers. The last link that I just mentioned has a little serial port connector and how it connects up, and you know, the entire circuit diagram is there. And then I guess the last thing that's interesting to mention, and this is something that, you know, a long time ago I had built, which was fun, is you can take sound and actually convert it from a sound, from an IR file to, or an IR signal to another type of signal, which is IR. And that basically allows you to capture infrared signals, make them into sounds, and then play them back out through something like an iPod or whatever. And that's always a fun thing to do because you can just splice a microphone and have those types of things. So that about does it. I wanted to get those two calls in. And if you want to call and leave a comment, a question, or whatever, call 206-888-MAKE, and we'll try to get to that. Also, visit the MakeZine.com site and check out the blog. And as always, please subscribe to Make Magazine. We just finished up our second issue, and man, it is smoking sweet hot. You got to see it. It's the Home Entertainment Edition, and it turned out really great. So that's it for me, and thanks a lot.